But yeah, just thank you all so much for this opportunity. It's been a pleasure. It's been amazing, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And yeah, this has really like opened my eyes to a whole new range of careers and classes, and I'm just super excited to see where all this information and everything takes me. So again, thank you so much.
Heck yeah, anytime.
Yeah.
And thank you, audience, for listening to Let's Talk. Portland Community College's broadcast about disability culture. You can find more information and resources concerning this episode and others at pcc.edu/DCA. This episode was produced by the Let's Talk Podcast Collective as a collaborative effort between students, the Accessible Education and Disability Resources Department, the PCC Multimedia Department, and KABU. We post newly recorded content bi-weekly on our home website. And again, that's pcc.edu/DCA. And we hope you always tune into our shows here on KABU every first and fourth Friday of the month at 9 a.m. My name's Carrie Cantrell, and we'll see you next time for Let's Talk. Yeah, we can say some more things. I can talk forever. I'm sleep deprived and I just had a latte, so I'm 100% on caffeine.
I can talk forever too.
Yeah.
We can keep talking.
Yeah. Let us speak words, because words are the essence of expression, and identity is nothing but a package of self-awareness that is coded by language, right?
We're all beautiful.
We're all beautiful in our own way.
Yeah. Exactly. Indeed. Yes. I love talking about it. Yeah. I liked going down Mississippi with you, Andrew. That was a beautiful morning walk.
It was awesome. It was so fun.
Awesome. So good.
And next month, Amanda was throwing around the idea of talking about going back to school, and I was reminded of it when we were talking about, and we're fading out now, but then murmur.
Hi, this is Mark Sanford Gross, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to KABU, KBOO, 90.7 FM, Portland.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here on KABU 90.7 FM and available online at kabu.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KABU 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here at KABU 90.7 FM.
I'm Grace Gregory Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KABU, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KABU.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio. Ooh.
Good morning. This is Disability Justice, an everyday pursuit and survival. Your host, John Griffiths.
And Dina Wilder, board operator.
With me in the studio today is once again Megan Schrader. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. My name is Megan Schrader. I teach people with intellectual disabilities at the University of Texas at a program called E4 Texas. And it's a post-secondary opportunity for people with intellectual disabilities. We are a vocational program, but we also integrate people with disabilities into the college.
Thank you. Today, we are going to be discussing special ed.
I think that lack of opportunity in special education is one of the primary mechanisms through which systemic ableism is maintained. And I feel very strongly that disabled students deserve the opportunity to attend college or pursue high quality vocational training if that's what they want.
Yeah, since we both grew up in special ed, I thought we could share a little bit about our experiences and what it was like for you in special ed.
Sure. So I had various experiences in the special education system growing up. I did sometimes have wonderful teachers. There was this one teacher in particular named Mrs. Brown, who I had in the first and third grade, and she seemed to intuitively understand what I needed. She was warm and loving. She was happy to provide accommodations. And without teachers like her, I would never have been able to go to college and get 2 master's degrees. Also, for most of my K-12 education, Massachusetts had a maximum feasible benefit standard for special education, and that made it easier for students to access the most robust level of support possible. But being special ed was also a lesson in how systemic ableism really is. I think some special ed teachers go into the field because they like to control smaller, weaker people. I'll never forget the time when my general ed class got to go make fudge for a math activity, and the people who were pulled out for small group math like me had to sit in a room and study social studies. There was a lot of stereotyping special ed kids as being violent and dishonest, both from school personnel and in the media. When I was in high school, students were grouped into classes based on levels of achievement and potential, and special education students were pushed toward the lower levels where they sat and did worksheets, regardless of what their potential was. I saw political progressives, brain accommodations for learning disabled students like me as like privileges that took money from the poor. And then conservatives claim that accommodations for people like me were related to a bloated welfare state. Disability history was not taught, and disability was not addressed during discussions of social justice. It all added up to a pattern of disabled people being invisible and manipulated. Special ed should just be a tool that disabled students use to access the K-12 curriculum, but it was an oppressive environment. We often talk about Congress failing to meet its responsibility to fund special education, and that's true. But more funding isn't enough. The special education needs a structural overhaul. In high school, accommodations for a math class I needed to graduate from high school weren't implemented illegally, so I started to fail the class. I was told that I should just drop it because I didn't need it for college. Normally, I wouldn't have done that, but I was having my first episode of mental illness. So rather than make myself sicker by fighting to pass, I said, okay. But then a year later, I learned that I did need the math class, not only to attend college, but even just to graduate from high school. The guidance and special education personnel tried to prevent me from re-enrolling in the math. They said the deadline for filing grievances through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act had run out, which was true, but they still had to follow the Americans with Disabilities Act, but then they tried to argue that I was not otherwise qualified to take the math class. Then when they failed to do that and I enrolled in the math class anyway, they argued as a special education student, I shouldn't bother taking the SAT. I had to fight to take both tests. The Educational Testing Service allowed the school to give me one of the tests from 2 to 8 p.m., and they allowed my deeply bigoted guidance counselor to choose himself as a proctor, which meant I had to sit in a room alone with him for 6 hours while he made ableist comments and violated testing accommodations. I was denied accommodations on my AP exams. I went to the ACLU and the Anti-Defamation League diversity coordinators at my school for help, but they both didn't include disability in their diversity efforts, and they didn't help. So at the end of my senior year, I filed a complaint with the United States Board of Education that was resolved in my favor after I had already graduated and gone to college. Around that same time, Massachusetts lowered its maximum feasible benefit standard for special ed students to slightly more than minimal target standards, And my school system decided that that meant that if a student wasn't failing their classes, they weren't eligible for special ed. So if you had a high GPA and were getting accommodations that you needed to do that, you lost access to some of those accommodations and were switched to a less robust system called a 504 plan. So now special education students essentially had to be getting a C or below. It was a lose-lose situation. And that obviously prohibits special ed students from maximizing their potential. I managed to push through the loss of some of my accommodations, but the new standards combined with the interpersonal ableism I experienced caused a lot of toxic stress. When I think about the experience, I think about this quote from Paul Longmore's book, Why I Burn My Book. Quote, meanwhile, invention and maintenance of the disabled caste has advanced the ideological and economic interests of an array of professional groups in the modern welfare state. Disability became a multi-million dollar industry. Many states still keep adults with physical or developmental disabilities imprisoned in nursing homes and other public and private facilities that exploit them for profit. That's the message that I got from the public school system, from social, from civil rights organizations, that I, as a disabled student, was obliged to join a kind of disabled caste so that I can maintain certain social systems. Like, they needed a certain amount of people to be demoralized and dependent. It was also really shocking to see, at the time, my school system was having a lot of discussions about equity and diversity, and it was really shocking for them to talk about equity and diversity for able-bodied members of disenfranchised groups, but then to leave disability out of that analysis and be, and not leave disability out of that analysis and be so deeply ableist in their treatment of me and other special education students. You know, all of that is related to my opposition to assisted suicide. Disabled people already have the deck stacked against us, and we shouldn't have to live in a society where doctors regularly offer to help us die, too. Also, if assisted suicide is ever legalized for people with disabilities, the special education system will set disabled children up to be part of a kind of poverty-to-need pipeline. So that's what my special ed experience was, and that's how it informs my perspective on disability rights.
But, I mean, at least it's been my experience that when it comes to anything around dealing with the social services for any minority, the system in the United States is completely broken and it's inferior at best.
Exactly. Like, and I want to make it clear here, when I talked about like people talking about justice for other able-bodied members of other groups, I'm not trying to play oppression Olympics and say that other groups aren't also oppressed. It was just interesting to see the dichotomy between how some of the people that were ableist thought about oppression in general and how they treated me. But you're right, all of the systems put in place to not only help the disabled, but also help, you know, BIPOC individuals and people living in poverty. They're all messed up.
Yeah. And it is sometimes that, like, you know, just because you have a disability doesn't mean you're not BIPOC. Just because you have a disability doesn't mean, like, I mean, we are so intersectional with so many issues that anything or in the social system probably affects some person with a disability somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. We have to look at it intersectionally. Like, for example, when I did my special education master's degree program, we learned that there were actually specific evidence-based techniques developed to help BIPOC children with disabilities reach their full potential. To, like, ensure that the cultural background of a student didn't become an impediment to them being properly diagnosed. And I think that's just a great example of intersectionality, you know, putting those structures in place to try to remediate stuff like structural racism and structural ableism.
Oh, yeah. The system. Boy, I wish we could start over. Well, I take that back. I wish we could build a better system.
Yeah.
But the only way we'll ever do that is if government and administration and legislators actually sit down and talk to us on how it should be built.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because when I was going through special ed, their focus was making sure that I got a job after high school rather than, hey, I want to go on to college. It was right. Just sort of like, no, that's that. Yeah, you got to focus on getting a job after high school.
And that was what I was too.
I was just sort of like, yeah, but I'll wind up in a dead-end job where I'll never advance because I am a person who has a disability and corporates do not promote. I mean, once you get stuck in, like, I mean, if you wind up working for Safeways, you'll always be a parcel clerk. Even after working there for 10 years, you will still be a parcel clerk. Whereas a person who doesn't have an intellectual disability will be promoted. And that's why I wanted to go on to college to prove, hey, I could do it. And I need a better job than just entry level.
Exactly. That's where I was too. There seems to be a contingent of people that like want to force people in special education to take menial jobs and be oppressed. It's really wrong, and it fits into a broader system of disabled people being oppressed.
Yeah. And you're right. I think it's completely wrong. It's completely wrong. What does a general special education system look like in the U.S.? I mean, you know, how good or how bad is it? Have you seen any improvements? Because, like, when I went to school in the 80s, it was a piece of in the special ed programs. I'm just kind of, like, wondering, has there been any improvements in special ed in any way, shape, or something like that?
I think I have a good answer for you. So the state of special education today is a mixed bag. There have been some improvements since I graduated from high school, when you graduated from high school. Like, for instance, the No Child Left Behind Act and the Every Student Succeeds Act require special education teachers to be certified in subjects they provide intervention for, and they have to use evidence-based techniques. That wasn't required when I was going to school, and so my parents had to sometimes hire tutors to do the special education teacher's job. Also, in 2017, the Andrew Support Supreme Court case finally raised the national abysmal slightly more than the minimum standard of progress for special education students to meaningful progress in light of the child's circumstances. But that standard is still not high enough to prevent students from being manipulated into poor educational outcomes. It really should be a maximum progress standard. Also, the special education system holds school personnel to a good faith standard for meeting students' IEP goals, and that's a very low standard for accountability that gives schools way too much power, because as long as personnel ostensibly make a good effort to accommodate students who are not meeting IEP goals, they did not break the law. That's just not enough accountability. It makes me actually really sad to see how little progress there has been. It makes me sad to see so many tropes that I experienced repeated in this generation. Like, for instance, in 2016, the Texas Education Agency manipulated the response intervention system, which is a way of determining whether a student has a learning disability or not, to put like an illegal cap on the number of students served by the special education system. And because of that, students with disabilities didn't get the services they needed and didn't go to college, or were less likely to attend college. It makes me sad to see that special education students are still stereotyped as being violent, and people still question the integrity of people who disclose some sort of invisible disability. Special education students are still pushed toward educational environments that make it difficult for them to grow academically and make a solid income as an adult. A lot of the students that I teach now spent most of their education in a life skills program where they learn very little. With the right scaffolding, they can do so much more. I had a student last year whose parents had to sue the school system, just like I had to file a complaint against mom, and many families continue to need to do. The arbitration process for complaints is really biased in favor of school districts. And all of this is connected to our nation's deep history of structural ableism and eugenics. There's even a eugenics pamphlet from the 1930s complaining about the cost of educating disabled students. So when I think about the special ed system today and historically, I find myself thinking about Ecclesiastes 1:9. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, I agree with that. What would a better special ed system look like?
Okay, so a better special education system would employ a maximum feasible benefit standard, which would require school districts, public school districts, parochial schools, private schools, all schools, to maximize special education student potential. It would help prevent special ed students from being abused, either to save money or make it easier for school personnel. For instance, an example illustrating the need for a maximum feasible benefit standard was a story in Disability Scoop titled "School System Suing Family Over Special Education Placement." It recounts a case that happened in Virginia in 2019. A severely disabled student named Marissa was really struggling in her public school system, so her public school IEP did not provide enough support or individual attention, so her parents moved her to a private school But the school system, the public school system sued to try to force the student to return to the public school, even though the stress of thinking about going to the back to the public school was making the student ill, like with panic attacks and stomach problems. And the school system used various technicalities to try to manipulate the situation. But basically, they tried to make her suffer so they could subject her to a subpar education. A maximum equal benefit standard would make it harder for school systems to do that kind of thing. They would be required to place the student in the environment where their potential is maximized, rather than being able to argue that a student's placement is providing some benefit or some meaningful benefit, and therefore it's okay. Also, a maximum feasible benefit would prevent the situation that I experienced when the school system in Massachusetts lowered the maximum feasible benefit to FAPE. Like, if we had a maximum feasible development, students would get their accommodations regardless of their GPA. It wouldn't be possible for students to for school systems to argue things like, well, you got a C, and therefore you don't need accommodations for your disability, when in fact they are disabled, they are entitled to accommodations, and they're entitled to earn whatever grade they earn with accommodations. So it would empower students to really strive hard for high goals rather than being pushed towards the outcomes of working menial jobs or being on welfare. And I do want to say, like, I mean, I strongly support a strong social safety net for anyone who feels they cannot work or is in a circumstances where they currently can't work. But a maximum feasible benefit standard would make it easier for students to graduate and get jobs they like and be financially independent, and they'd be less likely to get lost in the welfare system. So it's a win-win.
You know, this maximum feasible development, and I'm just kind of like curious where it stands right now. Have you seen any progression or any law around making it, or any bills within the House or Senate that would turn it into a law for the entire United States? Or is there one currently, like maybe in the state of Texas, that's being tried out?
I don't know of any bills that do that. It's a fairly unique idea. It really shouldn't be a unique idea. But all of the Supreme Court cases in the United States have stopped short of providing that maximum feasible progress standard. Andrews is the most recent, where it said you couldn't just require the minimal standard of progress. It had to be meaningful progress, but it doesn't have to be maximum progress. I would love to see bills in state legislators or nationally to change the standard to the maximum feasible benefit. I think that's what all children deserve, to maximize their educational potential, whether they're disabled or not. I also think a maximum feasible benefit would be good from an intersectional perspective. It would hold schools more accountable for like implementing evidence-based techniques for meeting the needs of like BIPOC students in special education. So yeah, I'd love to see that kind of promoted in the state legislators, but I don't think there's any bills right now.
Okay, so since there isn't a bill, it sounds like if parents would like to see the maximum feasible development in place in school, that they'll have to start something in that direction. At least I assume
that's what the thing. I mean, the way the disability anti-discrimination laws are structured are unfair. I mean, the Andrews case happened because, you know, the child's parents had the money and the wherewithal to do this complicated court case, but not everybody has the wherewithal to do that. So in order for a maximum feasible benefit standard to maybe be established right now through the courts, somebody would have to bring a lawsuit. But I don't see any reason why Congress couldn't sponsor bipartisan legislation to make the maximum feasible benefit. One piece of legislation that is really good that I don't know a lot about, but I've heard about, is something called the RISE Act. And that act would have required post-secondary programs to determine a student's eligibility for accommodations based off of their IEP, rather than forcing them to go get expensive new documentation by a clinician. And also, it would have required that all of the accommodations in a student's IEP be provided at the post-secondary level, rather than schools being able to say, oh, well, we just don't do that here. So really, in my opinion, if a child has an IEP, it should follow them from K-12, then to post-secondary, and then to their job. That's the best way. So doing that, combined with a maximum feasible benefit standard for things like special education, is the best way to fight systemic ableism and make disabled people fully integrated into the community.
And just for those who don't know, could you define IEP?
IEP, Individualized Education Plan, which is like a plan based off of the student's needs to determine like whether they're getting pull-out services for a particular class, what accommodations they're getting in a general education classroom, who is responsible for overseeing the progress of the IEP. You have collaboration between students, parents, teachers, a superintendent, and it's meant to give an individualized education that wouldn't be provided to them if they did not qualify as being disabled. Also, there's another system, which I did mention, called Section 504 plans, and those are for students who either don't need or don't qualify for an IEP, but still need accommodations. In that case, the 504 plan qualifies the student for accommodations under Section 504 and the ADA, but not IDEA. A maximum feasible benefit would like make it easier for the process to be streamlined and for the accommodations to be accessible, regardless of whether you have an IEP or a 504. The standard I'm envisioning would apply equally to like all kinds of schools. Like I experienced a lot of dysfunction in the public school system. And I know for sure that a lot of disabled students do better in like a private school or a charter school or a parochial school. But I do know of people with disabilities who have been rejected from a private school because the private school says they just don't take people with disabilities. The private school says they don't have to follow the ADA. They've had the same argument with parochial and charter schools. So when I say maximum feasible development, I was thinking of a national standard that would apply to every school, no matter what type of school it is. So that no matter what thing the student is in, they get a good education.
And would this also be applying to like, because I've always wanted a degree, would this also apply to like higher education? I know a few programs that come out and they say, you go through our program and you get a certificate. Well, most big corporations don't recognize certificates as a form of education. Unless you have like a bachelor's degree or an associate's or a master's or something of that nature, they just don't recognize that as a legitimate form of education.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's why disabled people wind up, you know, in low income jobs. There are like a lot of obstacles for people with IDD asking a post-secondary education, but that doesn't mean there aren't opportunities. Like, for example, all colleges are required to follow the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504. And if you need accommodations and can present a document that you need them, you can take it to the person coordinating accommodations at like a community college, and they have to provide accommodations. They still might try to be manipulative, but it, at least it's a doorway. It's at least it's a foot in the door to start on an associate's degree. And they have those resources at four-year colleges too. But like senior colleges can be a good stepping stone for a lot of people. Another like good resource to look at is thinkcollege.net, because each college approaches like IDD differently. That resource can help you like find a match, like a college program that might work for you. And then there's some colleges, like as you were talking about, college experiences that are valuable but don't really provide a like a certification. The program I teach at provides like a certification. So our students graduate with certifications as a teacher's assistant, an early childhood teacher assistant, or a personal care attendant. And that way they can use those certifications to get jobs. And it's a great program. Like our program is designed for people with IDD. And in addition to teaching them to do those jobs, teach important life skills, like how to have healthy romantic relationships, how to maintain a healthy diet, students a lot of classes relevant to their career path. And also some of our students have gone on to attend community college, or they have ambitions to attend a four-year college. So yeah, I mean, I bet you can find an opportunity out there somewhere. It's just much harder than it should have to be. But if you're a person with an IDD listening who wants to pursue education, like go for it. You know, it's just going to take some work.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time once again to talk to us.
Thank you for the honor of the opportunity. This is something I'm so passionate about, and I so appreciate the opportunity to talk about it on your program.
Hey, if you come up with another idea.
And I bet I can think of some more topics for us to address. I'll be happy to write some of them down and send them your way. Thank you so much.
That's the end of Disability Justice. Since we cannot be fully aware of everybody's difficulties within the community, we would really like it if you would send us your email, disabilityjustice@kbu.org.
Also, we're always looking for fun, inexpensive things to do out in the community. Go to disabilityjustice@kboo.org to contact us and give us your ideas.
Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover